The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
Now, Dublin Zoo continues to set new international standards in areas like elephant husbandry, receiving world recognition for its gorilla rainforest habitat, and developing an informed national audience for the complex conservation work that the zoo is undertaking. A new book, Dublin Zoo, An Illustrated History, tracks the nearly 190-year history of one of the three oldest zoological gardens in Dublin. It gives the readers insights into the zoo's evolution from a Victorian-era Dublin to the present day. And to tell us all about it, author and historian Catherine de Courcy. Catherine, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you.
Now, you and I are well acquainted because I have a family history in Dublin Zoo. But let's go back. This book originally came out in 2009. But even in that short period, 2009 to 2020, an awful lot has evolved.
It sure has. And it's very unusual for an institution to allow a second history to be written in such a short period of time. But the last 10 years have been critical in the evolution of Dublin Zoo, but also in Dublin Zoo's role internationally in terms of shaping zoos and where they're going to into the future. And we've also found loads more photographs from the past. We've got 19th century photographs, early 20th century photographs. These all emerged after the first history was written. So we've been able to incorporate all of those into a 190-year history of the zoo and make it very family-friendly in this instance. The last one was the first history of the zoo published. So it was slightly academic. In this one, the history is still there, it's still solid, but it's a livelier, more family feel tone to it.
Now, talk to me about the genesis of Dublin Zoo. Who started it and why?
Yeah, it was founded in 1830, opened in 1831, and the founder was Sir Philip Crampton and a group of people who were interested primarily in developing sensitivity towards animals amongst the general public. At the time, there was a big move to enact laws to prevent cruelty towards animals. So one of Philip Crampton's reasons for founding the zoo was to encourage people to become familiar with animals, to learn to love them and respect them so that they wouldn't hurt them. And this then, so they also, some of the early founders had an interest in the anatomy of the animals. So that, they were all volunteers, it was a charity, it was a society. So that really kept them going, and right through the years of the famine, on into the 1850s, when the zoo had no money, and these people who were doctors and barristers and lawyers and businessmen would go out once a week, and they really shaped Dublin Zoo in those days. And then we moved into the period, the 1850s, when they started to breed lions, and then Dublin Zoo really took off.
Now, there are all sorts of stories in the book. I mean, there's I suppose it's not history, but there's the suggestion that one of the MGM lions was a Dublin Zoo lion. You can't prove it, but you can't disprove it either.
That's the number of queries I have about the MGM lion. It's a huge story for Dublin Zoo, and I've put in what we know in this book. So what we know, Dublin Zoo sold their lions around the world, particularly they sold a lot to America in the early 20th century. It's possible that Slats, a lion born in Dublin Zoo, became the first MGM lion in 1919. A film crew actually went to America to chase up the bones of the first MGM lion, and somebody had claimed to have the bones, and we were all set to do some ancient DNA testing on some existing bones from other lions from that period, but it came to nothing. So it's possible that the first MGM lion was a Dublin Zoo lion. I also rang MGM and I talked to the vice president in charge of PR in MGM, and they said they don't have records from that period. So there's no way to disprove it. It's also, I think, Pat, one of the problems, one of the reasons why the story took hold for Dublin Zoo was because there was a lot of publicity in the 1940s when they came over to take photographs of Stephen with the view to having him in the logo, in an updated logo for MGM, but he was never used. However, the story, Cedric Flood was the director at the time, and he put the story into the newspapers. And I think, I suspect that could be one of the reasons why the story, there's so much interest in Dublin and the MGM Lion.
Now, you also recount some unfortunate deaths of those in charge of animals, Sita the elephant and James McNally, who was crushed in 1903.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this is one of the huge stories for zoos and elephants. And I mean, elephants are incredibly dangerous, as you and your family would well know, because your grandfather was in charge of the elephants. He took over from James McNally, and then your father was in charge of the elephants. James McNally had been looking after the elephants from the 1870s, and he had trained with one of Hagenbeck, the famous zoo elephant, the famous zoo in Hamburg, who specialised in elephant management. And McNally had he had trained with them. He knew what he was doing. But elephants are unpredictable. They are big animals, and it doesn't take much for one of them to injure or kill somebody. And in 1903, that's exactly what happened. It was a terrible tragedy, and it's still so relevant today because Dublin Zoo, as you know, is one of the world's leading managers of elephants in the new protected contact method, where no keeper goes in with an elephant, so they have their own space. But back in the day, and you can see from some of the photographs in the book, back in the day, people got terribly close to the elephants. And if the person in charge, in the case of, you know, your father or your grandfather, if the person in charge wasn't totally in charge of the elephant, accidents could happen. And there was that famous story where Cummerly, your father was unwell. This is in the 1960s, and Cummerly went, he could control Cummerly, but Cummerly went nuts. Cummerly ran at a group of school kids, tipped over a tractor, and he had to come from home on his bicycle to control Cummerly, because that's how risky it all is. So it's so crucial now, with the way the management of elephants is going, that Dublin Zoo keeps doing what it does, and it's gathering, you know, elephant people from all over the world come to see how Dublin is working with its elephants.
Yeah, because they operate as they would in the wild. There's the matriarch and all the calves, and everybody kind of sleeps in a heap together. It's fantastic to see. It absolutely is. Now, you talk about the development of Dublin Zoo. I suppose one of the key turning points was down to Bertie Ahern and Mary McAleese when the zoo got some land from the Oras.
Oh, it sure was, yeah. Dublin Zoo is a charity, so it's, and like so many zoos around the world, it relies entirely on its gate receipts and whatever money it can raise itself. But Bertie Ahern had a personal interest in the zoo. He used to go to the zoo with his father, or if his father wasn't around, he used to walk around the zoo and look in through the fence, as so many kids did in those days. And then when he was minister for Labour in the late 1980s, he sent FOSS workers in. But that was really just to patch up. The zoo was on the point of closure. The zoo was in a terrible state. In the early 90s then, he managed, when he was Minister for Finance, he managed to have some money directed, a capital grant directed to the zoo to get their infrastructure, their sewage works, under control. And then, because that went so well, President Mary McAleese, when she took over in the Aras, she handed over the land and the lake that is now the African Plains to Dublin Zoo. And then, again, because it was going so well, the money was been spent well, the government gave two more huge capital grants to Dublin Zoo. And when that ran out, Dublin Zoo was now on its own and was doing so well that all of the habitats from the gorilla rainforest onwards, 2011 onwards, have all been built by its own recurring funds. So it was, the zoo could well have closed in the 1990s, but it really is thanks to Bertie Ahern and his own personal enthusiasm and interest. But he also put some people from senior civil servants in to the council to make sure that everything went well. And as one of them said to me, he said it was probably some of the best ever Celtic Tiger money ever spent, because the zoo was always thrifty, and it continued through the time when it had a lot of money to be terribly thrifty, kept its administration small. So they just used the money so well that the zoo now is, well, obviously until this recent situation, has been doing extremely well.
Well, it's a brilliant book. It's Dublin Zoo, an illustrated history going back to the very beginning and up to the present day, when Dublin Zoo is a leader in conservation and indeed breeding of certain endangered species and so on. But the author of the book, which is available in all good bookshops and you can get it online as well, Catherine de Courcy, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trusted experts in orthopedics, spine, eye, cancer, and cardiology.
This is News Talk.